From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. On this week's Naps Chat, we're going to talk about a few so-called legal issues that have ensnared the United States Postal Service and could have lasting policy consequences for the agency's operations. One of these issues is directly related to NAPS's legal victory against the Postal Service before the Federal U.S. Court of Appeals here in Washington. The other legal issue was filed on April 28th in two federal courthouses, one in California and the other in New York. Let's first turn our attention to NAPS's legal win of earlier this year and some recent Ivy League legal analysis of the unanimous Court of Appeals decision in favor of NAPS. I would add that the Postal Service did not appeal that decision. However, UPMA, the United Postmasters and Managers of America, did appeal the decision, and their request for a rehearing of the case was rejected without comment. Now let's discuss two different law journal publications, both associated with Ivy League law schools. They are Yale University and the University of Pennsylvania. Both law schools stood up and took note of NAPS v. the United States Postal Service and decided to publish a commentary on the underlying NAPS victory. To review the case, there were four distinct issues under consideration by the court. 1. Did the Postal Service violate the law in failing to provide EAS-level postal employees a reasonable and adequate pay differential? 2. Did the Postal Service violate the law in failing to provide EAS-level employees with pay that is comparable with their private sector counterparts? 3. Did the Postal Service violate the law in failing to recognize NAPS as a legitimate representative of postmasters? And 4. Did the Postal Service violate the law in failing to recognize NAPS as a legitimate representative of managers assigned to postal headquarters positions? On all four issues, the Court of Appeals concluded the Postal Service, in fact, violated the law. With regard to supervisory representation, the court took the additional step of ruling that NAPS is the exclusive representative of postal supervisors under Section 1004 of Title 39 of the United States Code. Now, on to the Ivy League publications. Both the Yale and University of Pennsylvania legal journals explored the implications of NAPS versus USPS. Specifically, regarding the scope of the federal agency's discretion, that is, to what extent may the Postal Service, or any agency for that matter, exercise broad discretion that leads the agency to take actions that are beyond its legal authority? In other words, can they do what they please? In the NAPS case, the court unanimously ruled that the Postal Service's unlawful discretion to deny fair EAS compensation and legitimate NAPS representation exceeded the authority Congress granted to the Postal Service in Title 39 of the United States Code. In analyzing the court decision, Yale and the University of Pennsylvania suggested that the ruling may have impressive implication for future actions by the United States Postal Service, as well as for most other federal agencies, as they seek to exercise agency discretion. In our case, the Postal Service exceeded its authority by attempting to justify its actions with a not-too-credible explanation after the discretion was exercised. The Yale article points out that an agency cannot seek an after-the-fact justification of a discretionary act. then it's too late to defend the action. The University of Pennsylvania article wrote that the court found that the Postal Service did not have the option to choose any policy it liked or implement simply because the agency thought it was appropriate. The article went on to say that the court's message was clear. Just because an agency has discretion to determine how best to meet its legal obligations does not mean it has the discretion to ignore those obligations. The Postal Service, and apparently the United Postmasters and Managers of America, expected the court to grant the Postal Service substantial deference in the agency's interpretation of Title 39 of the United States Code regarding EAS pay consultation and supervisory representation. In a surprise to the Postal Service and to UPMA, but not to NAPS's crack legal team, the ultimate determination of the limits of agency discretion rests with the federal court, not with the Postal Service itself. I would respectfully suggest that this ruling may have broad and far-reaching implications for such issues as the controversial elements of the Postal Service's 10-year plan. For example, what deference will the courts provide to the Postal Service with regard to what constitutes prompt, economical, reliable, and consistent delivery of mail in decision-making on the mode of mail transportation, or with regard to compliance with environmental standards in the procurement of next-generation postal vehicles? Now, this provides a good segue to another legal quagmire into which the Postal Service has become caught. 16 states, a handful of environmental groups, and one labor union have filed suit to stop the Postal Service from moving forward with its contract with Oshkosh Defense to manufacture new postal delivery vehicles. The states that sued the Postal Service are California, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. Also, the District of Columbia joined into the suit. All brought suit claiming the Postal Service violated the National Environmental Policy Act when it contracted with Oshkosh Defense for the manufacture of 165,000 next-generation postal vehicles, most of which are to be gas-powered. Those suing the Postal Service requested the courts to stop the Postal Service from proceeding with the manufacture of the vehicles at this time and to conduct a credible environmental impact study on the deployment of those or any replacement postal vehicles. The National Environmental Policy Act was signed into law by then-President Richard Nixon in 1970. The act requires federal agencies to evaluate the environmental impact of their proposed actions before making a decision. The procurement of gas-powered vehicles has raised the ire of such members of Congress as Representative Jerry Connolly, chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Subcommittee on Government Operations, as well as the White House itself. In fact, at the bill signing ceremony for the Postal Service Reform Act, President Biden explicitly mentioned the intent of the federal government to pivot away from gas-powered vehicles. In addition, both the Environmental Protection Agency and the White House Council on Environmental Quality severely criticized the Postal Service's decision and the Postal Service's analysis underlying that decision. Ordinarily, the Department of Justice defends the Postal Service in federal lawsuits. But inasmuch as the administration does not support the Postal Service's decision-making on the Oshkosh contract, it will be interesting to see if the Postal Service uses its own in-house attorneys or will feel the need to contract with private attorneys to represent agency interests. In any case, litigation could very well delay the deployment of much-needed postal vehicles. We'll see what happens over the next few months. On to postal governance. And I'd like to talk with you about the nomination of Daniel Tangerlini and Derek Kahn. As of April 29th, the nominations to these individuals to the USPS Board of Governors was still pending on the Senate floor, awaiting a final vote on confirmation. That vote has yet to be scheduled. The last issue I would like to mention is the May 1st change in delivery standards for first-class parcels. In sum, according to the Postal Service, the delivery time will be slower for about one-third of mailed parcels, that is, first-class mailed parcels. Basically, parcels will join letters in a concerted effort to lessen America's expectation about prompt mail delivery. As we know, the performance standard for letter mail was changed last year. It is the Postal Service's hope that the new lighter standard will permit the agency to eventually boast that 95% of first-class mail reaches its destination on time. Unfortunately, it's not quite going that way for first-class letters. In fact, postal data indicates that for the second quarter of the current year, only 86.7% of letter mail reached its destination on time. That's a bit more than 8% short of the established goal and represents a 2.4% decrease from the previous quarter. Indeed, the Postal Regulatory Commission was quite prophetic last summer when it cast doubt on the agency's ability to deliver reliable timeliness, even with the 2021 mail slowdown. We can be confident that the Congress, the White House, the Postal Regulatory Commission, and possibly the courts will take a deep and renewed interest in postal performance, particularly in an election year, when absentee ballots will once again occupy a prominent role in defending our democracy. With that being the last word this week, I want to thank NAPS listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make me